So I've decided to change things up. I can feel my brain tilting, getting overcluttered with stress and worry, and so I need to escape the swells, to take a break from my neighbors and share a different story. We're all here for distraction, myself included, and I've been sitting on the beginnings of a short story for a while, and I think now is as good a time as any to share it. I began working on this short story in January of 2020, blissfully unaware of the myriad of horrors to come. I've revisited it occasionally over the years, but just haven't gotten around to finishing it. And by sharing it here, I know it will force me to do just that. And if any of you have been paying attention to the "would you rather be trapped in a forest alone with a man or a bear" discussion on TikTok, this story feels quite timely. That's Wallace. We're just going to keep going. There You Are is the story of Jane, a woman who was stalked and kidnapped by a man and saved by a monster. It's a story about hypervigilance and anxiety and how they can both cripple and save us. It's a story of the particular devastation of survival. Please note, this story contains elements of trauma, mental illness, and sexual assault. I don't go into detail, but this story might not be the one for you if those topics cause distress. I mean, of course they're distressing. But I want to let you know ahead of time that Jane's story isn't a cozy one. We're headed into a world of crime and horror. Nothing cozy about it. Wallace. Anyway, I'll share There You Are a few chapters at a time. I'm going to attempt a weekly episode, but we'll see. And my best guess is that it will take me 3, maybe 4 installments to share what happened to Jane. As for Patreon, I will release it there without the intro chatter in its entirety once the story is complete. Oof. If you haven't yet caught on, this podcast is my way of dragging you all along as I teach myself to write. There You Are is just different enough that it's making me frightened to share it here, which is why we simply must proceed. This autumn we'll return to the swells, but for now, let's hop in the car and take the long drive to upstate New York. There You Are by Liz Sauer. Epigraph. Wherever you go, there you are. Jon Kabat-Zinn. What are you thinking about? You drifted off. Jane gave the slightest shake of her head.
I was thinking about the woods.
Yes, but I've noticed you pause at that same moment before. Before you double back and he continues off in the opposite direction. What happened?
No. He was just so close at that point. I knew it was my only chance.
The therapist tilted her head and took a slow, steadying breath. Jane recognized the response. She'd seen it countless times in the hours she'd spent in Andrea's office.
You don't have to tell me. Not yet, not ever. But when you allow yourself to feel what it was like and witness yourself surviving, you bring yourself farther and farther away from that cabin. Saying it out loud, telling your truth, puts me in the driver's seat, Jane finished for her, having heard the saying a dozen times. She nibbled a hangnail, her own telling tick.
What made you double back? Andrea pressed. He was behind you, hunting you down. I wondered, for some time now, you could have continued forward, putting more distance between the two of you, but you didn't. You turned back. Why?
If I'd continued on the way I was going, I would have run straight into the lake. I wouldn't have had a chance.
But you didn't know that at the time, right?
Jane shifted in her seat. Andrea remained silent.
I saw something. I mean, I thought I saw someone.
Oh? Jane chewed the inside of her lip, then forced herself to tell the truth, to say the thing that frightened her the most.
The woods were dark because of the storm, and it was hard to move through the brush. I was hunched over and moving as fast and as quietly as I could, but I was shivering so badly my legs wouldn't do what I wanted them to. His voice kept getting closer. I started to look for a place to hide. I was looking around. I thought I saw someone. I mean, I did. I saw someone move behind a tree ahead of me.
Were you afraid of them? Is that why you turned around?
No.
I thought maybe they could help me. I called out very quietly. I asked for help.
I moved towards a tree I'd seen them walk behind, but they weren't there. I was confused. I thought I was probably hallucinating, and that worried me because I wasn't sure if it might be some sign of hypothermia, and I knew that if I couldn't think straight, I wouldn't have a chance. I kept stumbling forward, and then I saw it again. Andrea's eyebrows twitched. It wasn't real. Jane pressed her lips together. It was just my brain trying to keep me alive. What did your brain show you? Jane took a deep breath in through her nose. A monster, she said, exhaling. Do you feel comfortable telling me what the monster looked like? Andrea asked after a beat. A devil, like a forest devil. That's what I've named it in my mind, Jane admitted, letting out a small laugh. She just rose up from the brush right in front of me like she'd been crouched down. I don't know how I didn't scream, but thank God I didn't. I froze. Her skin looked like tree bark, but smooth. She was about maybe 8-9 feet tall. Huge, but thin. Jane's eyes met her therapist, then slid away to the window. She had antlers, like a deer, but there were horns coming out of her forehead, too. She didn't have a nose or ears, but her face was somehow human. Her eyes were huge. They were like jet black, but not shiny, dull, cloudy. Time ticked by as the women sat in silence. There was a monster blocking your path from the monster hunting you, Andrea said finally. Jane, I'm so sorry. Jane blinked back tears. It raised its arm, if you could call it that. It was more like a long, thin branch with short, thinner branches at its end. At first, I thought it was pointing at me, but it wasn't. It was pointing behind me, back and to the right. I was afraid to turn my head. I thought I'd turn and see him standing there. I had this horrible moment where I thought they were working together. Joel and the monster, I mean. I began to back away from the thing, and then it said... Jane stopped. She was furiously picking at a hangnail in her left pinky, not realizing it had begun to bleed. It spoke, but it didn't open its mouth. It spoke to me without speaking. What did it say? It said, he is close, Jane whispered. Go. It was helping you. Jane shook her head. It wasn't real. My subconscious must have conjured it up, somehow knowing that if I doubled back, it would throw Joel off. Andrea sat and thought, have you seen anything like that before or since? Jane sniffed. Do I usually see monsters? No. All right, what happened next? You know what happened. I escaped. Walk me through it. If you stop here, you remain in those woods caught between two monsters. Jane sighed. I didn't want to, but I had to turn my back on that forest devil thing because I could hear Joel getting closer. That sick fucker was yelling, Janie, where are you? Don't panic, honey. Just come towards the sound of my voice. He was doing it in case there was anyone else in those woods listening. Her hands balled into fists on her lap. I turned and backtracked in the direction she hesitated briefly. The monster told me to. I didn't have a choice. I had to get away from it, and Joel was so close. He passed by not 10 feet from me, but he was so focused on looking ahead that he didn't even notice me. She closed her eyes, forcing herself to steady her breath. I stayed very still as he passed by and watched him for a count of 30 before I began moving again. At that point, did you think you'd lost him? Jane opened her eyes. Who? Andrea looked taken aback, but quickly arranged her expression into one of gentle concern. Either of them, I suppose. No, not really. I don't know how long I walked, 20 minutes, 30. I found a 2-lane road and walked parallel to it, about 10 feet into the woods. It was slow going and it was freezing cold, but I didn't want to walk out in the open. He'd abducted me from a parking lot, for Christ's sake. He wouldn't have had any trouble taking me from the side of the road. I watched the gas station for a long time before I got up the nerve to go inside. I was paranoid. Rightly so, I guess, Jane said, her eyes briefly meeting the therapist's.
A man went in to pay for gas and I didn't trust it. I just thought maybe he'd, I don't know. I just didn't want to be near another strange man. But then two young women pulled up and pumped gas. When they went inside, I trailed after them. I figured there was no way they would be in league with him, with Joel. Cautious. Jane gave half a smile. Paranoid. Perceptive, Andrea countered. Jane shrugged. What happened inside the gas station? The attendant recognized me immediately. I mean, after she got over the shock of having a muddy, soaking wet, deranged woman stumble into the store in nothing but a t-shirt. She said, "My God, it's you. They've been looking everywhere for you." And then those girls squealed their own, "Oh my gods," and I said, "Please call the police, he's coming. I don't know how much time we have." At least that's what they've told me, I said, because after that, I don't really have any memories except for flashes, the police lights outside, having my blood pressure taken at the hospital, the nurses coming in telling me how happy they were I was found. And then Peter got there and I completely broke down. He broke down. I never thought I'd see him again. Tears rolled down Jane's cheeks, but she did not wipe them away. Her voice remained steady. "You know, they thought he was behind the whole thing. They let everyone believe he'd done something to me. He had to deal with the police harassing him when he knew I was out there, God knows where, and they wasted their time focusing on him." How awful for him, especially given his line of work. Jane nodded. His second book was about a young woman who simply vanished. They found her car on the side of a country road in New Hampshire, but there was no sign of her, no leads. She's been gone for years. It was the same with me. I simply vanished. "But you came back," Andrea said firmly. "You escaped, Jane. You survived." Jane scrubbed at her eyes. "You saw your chance and you took it. You got away." Jane began picking at the hangnail again. "He's still out there." Andrea put the notebook she'd been holding down onto the coffee table in front of her. "He's long gone." "That seems to be the party line." "Are you afraid he'll come back?" "I know he will." Joel hummed a gentle tune she couldn't place. "I'll never let you go," he whispered, pouring a cup of water over her head, rinsing away the conditioner he gently combed through her hair. Jane stared straight ahead, her knees pulled to her chest, her arms wrapped around them. Shivers racked her body, despite the warmth of the water surrounding her. "You know that, right, Janie? I promise I'll never let you go, even if some cruel twist of fate tears us apart. I'll always come for you. You'll never be alone again," he said, before continuing to hum the tune that would haunt her for the rest of her life. Chapter 2. Jane entered the cafe two doors down from her therapist's office. It had taken her a long time to open up to Andrea. In the beginning, they'd spent the hour in silence. Jane mute, physically unable to speak, shivering uncontrollably at the thought of revisiting the cabin in her mind. Andrea simply sat with her, solid and safe, unflappable. Only in the past month or so had Jane been able to talk about what had happened in that cabin. It was difficult, brutal, even, talking about the abduction, but Andrea was right. It helped, if only to remind Jane that if she was there, sitting across from Andrea, in her softly lit office, the worn cornflower blue armchair beneath her, the framed black and white silhouette of the Syracuse skyline hanging on the wall beside them, then she wasn't in the cabin. She'd really made it out of those woods. It was Andrea's idea to order a coffee after her twice weekly therapy sessions, a homework of sorts. It was months before Jane could do it. She hated her therapist for suggesting it, but she hated herself more for her inability to push past the terror that consumed her at the thought of the simple task. Brief interactions like ordering a coffee had never been a problem before the abduction, but getting kidnapped soured one on casual interactions with strangers. Keeping her sunglasses firmly in place, she stepped to the back of a two-person line, clocking everything in the brightly lit coffee shop. There were two college students at a far back table. A man in a navy blue business suit had entered the bathroom at the back of the shop just as she walked in. A teenager was placing her order, and there was a guy with about 20 ear piercings ahead of her in line. A short, stocky man in a crisp white polo shirt manned the register. He was new. Jane had never seen him before.
Breathe. You can leave any time you want. Breathe.
Jane listened as the guy ahead of her placed his order with a kind, grandmotherly barista behind the counter. Her dread grew. She'd ordered from this woman before. Friendliness beamed from the woman. Above all else, kindness, especially from strangers, rattled her now. She couldn't trust it, wouldn't trust it. She'd lowered her guard once, and it nearly cost her life. She was about to step out of line and leave without a drink when someone grabbed onto her upper arm.
"Oh my God, hi!" a woman exclaimed.
Jane ripped her arm away, backing into the earring-laden guy.
"Oh, I'm so sorry to startle you. I just haven't seen you in so long. It's Jane, right? How are you? Did you divorce us and find another studio?"
"Beth," Jane breathed after apologizing to the guy she'd just jostled.
"No, I'm just taking a break."
"Well, come back to us." Jane forced a smile, though her heart felt as though it would beat out of her chest. "Breathe," she thought, feeling a panic attack testing the perimeters. "Breathe.
Did you switch to Pilates? You look great."
The woman seemed oblivious to Jane's inner turmoil.
"What can I get you, miss?"
the barista asked from behind the counter. Jane couldn't speak. She closed her eyes for the briefest moment, feeling the impatience roll off the patrons who just joined the line, the confusion of her old spin instructor, her panic beginning to blot it all out.
"Breathe.
May I have a coffee, please?" she asked, her voice shaky.
"Sure, honey. Would you like light, medium, or dark roast?"
Jane stared.
"I always get the medium," Beth chirped.
"Okay, yeah, medium, please." Jane hated coffee, had lost her taste for it in the cabin. She usually ordered hot chocolate, the sugar, a rebellion against Joel's restrictions.
"I did the whole mobile order thing," Beth said, sticking close to her as she moved to the front of the store.
"So anyway, did you join a gym?"
"No, I just took a break from everything. It was good to see you, but..."
"Ashley, look who it is!" Beth exclaimed to someone behind Jane.
"Oh my God, hi! How are you?"
Jane turned and saw another instructor from the spin studio she'd once attended religiously. She met Ashley's eyes and saw, in an instant. The woman knew. She knew about the terrible thing that had happened to Jane.
"Hi," Jane said, accepting the coffee and slapping a $5 bill down, avoiding interaction with the new man behind the counter.
"Listen, it was so good to see you both, but I've got to run. I'm late for something. Bye." As she scurried towards the door, she heard Ashley's excited voice.
"Oh my God, Beth, do you even know who that was?"
Jane dumped the coffee in the first trash can she passed as she fled to her car. "The coffee isn't too hot for you, is it?" The coffee was far too hot, but Jane shook her head.
"Good.
Lukewarm coffee has always been one of my little bugaboos." Joel's eyes crinkled at the edges as he scrunched his nose.
"Extra hot, I tell him every time. But you know the type behind a cafe counter. Students and divorcees. What do they know about coffee?"
Jane took a careful sip.
"It's organic," he said. "You can really taste the difference, can't you?"
Jane forced the corners of her mouth up.
"How about the creamer?"
"It's nice, thank you," she managed.
"I know it's not what you're used to."
His nose crinkled again, but his eyes remained watchful.
"You must know how bad that artificial junk was for you. Full of chemicals, and sugar, for that matter. You might as well have been drinking candied plastic."
Steam floated gently up from the mug before her. She breathed evenly, using all her willpower to hold back a response.
"Your taste buds will normalize over time. You'll see."
"There's a new guy at the front desk," Jane said, as Peter relocked the two deadbolts and slid the chain back into place.
"I just met him," he replied, leaning down to plant a kiss on her cheek.
"I didn't see an email about them hiring anyone new." She didn't want to sound as paranoid as she was, but she couldn't help herself. She'd spent the past hour and a half imagining scenarios in which their building's new concierge was able to break into their condo or lure her out into the hallway under false pretenses. Peter held up his phone. I sent an email on my way up in the elevator. I'm sure they just didn't get the chance to let the residents know yet. Jane bit her tongue, wanting to rant over the irresponsibility of the management company for not alerting them to a staff change, but she knew it would only make her sound as crazy as she actually was. "How about a glass of wine?" Peter said, holding out his hand to her. She took it and allowed him to pull her up off the couch. "I think I might have a lead on a witness," he told her, as he poured two glasses of Chardonnay. "She returned my email, but I don't think she feels comfortable putting anything in writing. I may have to meet with her face to face." "Oh," Jane said, trying to mask the concern in her voice. "Where does she live?" "Salt Lake City," Peter replied. Jane pursed her lips. "I wouldn't go for another couple weeks, I'm sure, and then only for a night. I was thinking you could stay at your sister's." Jane swallowed a large gulp of wine. "Don't worry about that. I'm just happy you're making progress on the book." He took the stool next to hers at the kitchen island. "And how was your day?" he asked, rubbing her back.
It was okay. I'm almost done with the audiobook. I just have to listen through it one last time to be sure the sound is clean."
"Wow. End of an era."
Jane nodded, taking another sip. "Maggie asked if I could be available if anything comes up with past projects, but yes, that's it. Goodbye, Audiobox. I'm a free agent."
"Congratulations," Peter said warmly. "I'm so proud of you. What are you going to tackle first?"
"Well, I have 3 podcasts lined up, but they gave me so much lead time, there's no rush. I thought maybe I could start getting this place ready, declutter it, or whatever."
Peter turned to fully face her.
"Really?"
"Yeah."
"You're sure?" Jane nibbled at a hangnail before answering.
"We've been over all the pros and cons. Your mom needs help. We should be there."
A loud bang sounded over their heads, followed by high-heeled footsteps clacking across the polished concrete floor in the condo above them.
"Well, I won't miss having upstairs neighbors, that's for sure," Peter replied, grinning.
"And we'll catch the spring market."
"Carrie will be thrilled," Jane said of Peter's sister.
"Megan will be devastated," Peter countered, referring to her own.
"She understands," Jane said before draining her glass.
Peter picked up the wine bottle.
"Did something happen to change your mind? I thought we were going to put it on the back burner until you'd gotten your sea legs with a new business," he asked as he refilled their glasses.
Jane's mind flashed to the coffee shop.
"Oh my God, Beth, do you know who that was?"
"It just feels like the right time," she said.
Peter leaned forward and kissed her before holding up his glass.
"To a fresh start."
"A fresh start," Jane mimicked.
Chapter 3. She'd begun her career in the warm embrace of public radio, moving rather quickly up the ranks to senior broadcast engineer. That's where, while overseeing the recording of an interview on his very first book, she'd met Peter. He'd taken her by surprise when, instead of leaving directly after the interview, he'd knocked on the sound room door and asked her if she might like to grab lunch. She'd accepted. Now she couldn't fathom doing something so risky, but things were different then. She was 29, confident, arrogant in her assumption of safety. He bought her lunch at a popular deli close to the studio. The same deli where she would later encounter Joel Vincent Hayes. They ate their sandwiches on a bench in front of her office. Peter was a writer, a true crime writer who'd just published his very first book on a cold case in Cazenovia about a child who'd been strangled, his body found at the lake's edge. It was an incredibly dark story, but Jane didn't mind dark at a time in her life when everything around her seemed to glow so brilliantly. They dated for 2 years. He published another book and then proposed. They bought a condo and a converted industrial building in Armory Square, a space with polished concrete floors, a shiny modern kitchen, and massive floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the Museum of Science. She reached the very top of her profession at the radio station by the time she was 34, and then one day, as she mixed the morning news, she caught a story about the growing interest in podcasts, and it piqued her own interest. Within 6 months, she'd secured a consulting role at Audiobox, an independent recording studio used not just by musicians, but indie podcasters, too. By 2016, she was part owner of the company, having left public radio behind. Peter rode the wave of podcasts, too,
True crime, one of the highest performing genres on the platform. It was the second book that made him famous. The one about the young woman who disappeared into thin air in New Hampshire, her car found on the side of the road, several witnesses unable to offer any useful information to her whereabouts. Having spent so much time studying the awful ways in which people could be disappeared, brutally murdered, tortured, stalked, and worse, when Jane failed to answer his text messages, not just that Friday night, but the next morning as well, his mind went to the worst-case scenario. He called the concierge in their building. Jane hadn't been seen since 5 o'clock the prior evening. By 7:30 that next morning, the police had been alerted, and Peter was in his car, making the 2.5-hour drive back from Albany, where he'd been promoting his books at a true crime convention. By 8 o'clock, he'd spoken to the woman who Jane had been working with the night before. They'd hosted a live recording at the studio. An audience of approximately 20 people had attended the recording of the Minimalist Girl Boss podcast. Jane worked the event until 9 o'clock. Her co-manager, Jen, saw her leave to the back hallway, presumably headed to the parking lot behind the building. It was later discovered that the surveillance camera that kept watch over the lot had been intentionally disabled. Peter went straight to the police station upon his return to Syracuse. "Something is very wrong," he'd insisted. He was taken seriously, but there was nothing to do besides check in with Jane's family and friends and hope that they knew something of her whereabouts. By late morning, the focus of the investigation turned to Peter. Why was he in Albany? What exactly was the nature of his work? Unsolved murders and missing persons cases, how did he fall into that sort of reporting? Meanwhile, Jane was sipping too hot coffee and doing her best to stay calm and take stock of the man who'd chained her to a kitchen table in a beautifully appointed cabin at the edge of Lake Ontario. Chapter 4. "I totally get it," Megan said, sniffling. "You guys deserve a change, a fresh start, right?" Jane listened to the Sesame Street theme song stream into the small kitchen from the family room. She crossed her arms, not trusting herself to speak. "I'm being selfish. Dover is what, 4 hours away?" "Closer to 5. Megan blinked. "That's nothing. And his sister's there, right? We've had you for all this time. It's only fair they should have you close by. Especially considering his mom's condition. How is she, anyway?" "She forgot to turn the kitchen sink off before she left the house the other day, and when Carrie helped her to bring the groceries inside, she found it running. The biggest concern is the oven. I think they'll have the gas shut off, so it won't be a problem, but still." "Jeez." "Carrie told Peter she'd started to line the windows with crystals, too. Says it keeps the forest spirits at bay." "Oh, the poor thing." Megan wiped her nose. "It's so unfair, isn't it? She's such a good person, and then there's our own mother who's pickled her entire body for years, and yet she can still get up and do that stupid aerobics tape every morning." It'll catch up with her eventually," Jane said bitterly. "It just doesn't seem fair." "It isn't, but Carrie says Barbara's days are good for the most part. That's why I think we should move before things take a turn. I know Peter would regret not spending as much time with her as he can before it heads south." "When will you move?" Jane shrugged. "We're having a real estate agent over on Monday. I suppose she'll tell us what we have to do to get ready to sell. We probably have a couple months." Jane was 18 years old when she watched Gavin DeBecker tell Oprah how important it was for women to trust their instincts when it came to strangers. Red flag, a man who refuses to hear the word no. Red flag, inappropriate requests for help. Red flag, a subtle, uneasy feeling in your gut. As the emergency exit door clicked closed behind her that night in early October, Jane had only one thought in her mind: getting home and putting on an old Agatha Raisin episode to rinse the nonsense she'd just heard at that live recording. "Lean in, ladies. You can have it all, but you mustn't let it all clutter your space," the podcaster espoused during an hour and a half of vapid fluff in that particularly insidious form of girl boss propaganda. Her hackles raised when she first heard the footsteps off to her right. She was headed to the left, away from the noise, when she felt herself freeze up. Her animal instincts had done their job, for she was in mortal danger. "Queenie, here, girl," a man's voice rang out through the night. He stepped out of the shadows.
"Oh, I'm sorry if I startled you."
He held up his hands to show he posed no threat.
"It's my dog. I've been looking for her for the past half hour."
Jane managed a smile. "Good luck." She was just steps from her car.
"Yeah, thanks," the man said. "The thing is, she's mostly deaf. I think she's hiding back there."
He motioned to the wooden fence surrounding the building's dumpster.
"She won't know it's me, and she's too afraid to come out."
"Sure," Jane said, still moving towards her car.
Her heart was beating faster, dutifully pushing blood to her muscles and her heart preparing for her to move, to fight.
She was beginning to breathe more rapidly, small airways in her lungs opening wide so she had the breath to take flight. Her mind overrode her body, warning her against being rude to a strange man, something that could elicit his anger and put her in danger.
"Hey, wait a minute. Grilled cheese with tomato, right?"
"What?"
"I work at the deli."
The man's chuckle was tinged with embarrassment.
"That's your usual order, isn't it?"
"Oh, yeah, yes, that's right. Hi." She hadn't recognized him at first. His hat had thrown her off.
"You know what? Could I ask you a favor?"
"I wouldn't ask unless I was desperate. I just don't want Queenie to get hit by a car or anything in this parking lot."
"Of course," Jane said, desperately wanting to get into her car.
"I will be forever indebted to you," the man said, putting his hands into a gesture of prayer.
"If you could just come over here and clap your hands, and I'll go on the other side and catch her as she comes out."
Jane placed her handbag and keys on the trunk of her car and walked towards the man.
"Thank you," he breathed.
Had Jane been listening to her intuition, she would have picked up on the excitement in his voice.
"Yep, right over there. Okay, perfect."
She was on the ground before she had time to comprehend what was happening to her. The jolt of electricity incapacitated her. It didn't last long, though it was long enough for him to pop the hatchback on his car before he hit her again with the taser. The second jolt hit harder than the first. They were out of the parking lot before she'd recovered her ability to scream.
Chapter 5.
"I think that's wonderful," Andrea said warmly. Jane nodded. "And such good timing for you, having wrapped up your work at your old company."
"It is, and Peter can do his work anywhere too, so."
"How is your mother-in-law doing?" Andrea asked, concern knitting her brows together.
"The decline's been gradual. I think it's best we go before things change."
"It's going to be hard, Jane." Jane's eyes moved to the window, to the view of a red brick wall across the alley.
"It won't be so bad. We can fit everything we own in a small truck. It's only a 5-hour drive."
"That's not what I mean," the therapist said patiently. "You'll be out of your familiar routine."
"I'm hoping that getting away from everything familiar will be a good thing."
"How so?" Andrea tilted her head inquisitively. Jane sighed. "I don't want to have to push away the memory of being taken every time I pass audio box in my car. I don't want to be recognized as that poor woman who was abducted by that psycho anymore."
"Did someone recognize you?"
"It was nothing, just a woman from my old spin class."
"Do you want to tell me about it?"
"No, it just hasn't happened in a while, so I wasn't ready for it." Andrea drew in a breath and let it out slowly.
"I've been thinking about your monster."
Jane froze.
"I did some research, actually. I wondered if perhaps there were any accounts of similar situations where a person's mind conjured an image to help them escape danger."
Jane watched her therapist closely for any sign that the woman might be about to declare her insane.
"And?"
"And what I found were many first-person accounts of spirit encounters. In fact, I found a forum where people share stories of being in the forest and receiving help from benevolent creatures."
Jane sniffed.
"I copied down the name of the website for you."
Andrea slid a monogrammed piece of notepaper across the coffee table.
Jane hesitated before reaching for it.
CryptoZoologyToday.com?
Andrea smiled. "Where else would one find such stories?"
"But those types of people..."
Those types of people saw a creature in the woods who helped them when they were in distress. That sounds very similar to your story, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I know you feel most comfortable isolating Jane, but in the comfort, you run the risk of sliding back into agoraphobia.
Andrea held up a hand to stop Jane's defense. Absolutely no one would blame you for wanting to hide from the world after what happened to you. But what happened to you was an anomaly. The chances of it happening again, of meeting a stranger who becomes obsessed with you to the point of abducting you, under the premise that he can convince you to run away and build a new life with him, it will never happen again. By walling yourself off from the possibility of another attack, you wall yourself off from all other possibilities.
So what? What do you think I should do? Join a cryptozoology forum and make buddies with people who see fairies in the woods? I feel like you totally misunderstood what I told you. That's why I'd never told anyone about the monster or whatever it was that I saw. It wasn't real. I hallucinated. Something inside me, my subconscious or whatever, conjured the image and it saved me. I don't believe in monsters. Whether you believe in them or not, you saw one. A very specific monster at a very specific time who carried an incredibly specific and accurate message. And you're not the only one who's experienced such a thing.
Andrea sighed. What if, for just a moment, we considered the idea that in the middle of something awful, something magical happened to you? And what if you were able to find someone else who's experienced the same?
Jane picked at the cuticle on her thumb.
What would you think of that person?
I think they were crazy.
Really?
Jane uncrossed and recrossed her legs.
Yeah, if someone told me they saw a monster in the woods and it helped them, I'd think they were crazy.
Do you think you're crazy?
Jane looked out the window.
I don't know, she said quietly. That's why I'm here.
To find out if you're crazy. Jane nodded, blinking back tears.
Well, you're not. You've been traumatized, uniquely and horribly so. You suffer from post-traumatic stress, which has caused an inability to trust people outside of your immediate social circle, and you carry an immense amount of guilt and a false sense of responsibility for what happened to you.
Jane's eyes met the therapist's. Is that what it says about me in that little black notebook?
Andrea smiled and nodded.
It also says you're an accomplished professional who's managed to keep her career and maintain close relationships through an event that would leave many others' lives in shambles. You're eating again. You're facing down the temptation to isolate yourself every day. And so far, you've avoided the alcohol trap so many survivors fall into.
Well, there's the bright side. At least I'm not an alcoholic yet.
Be proud, Jane, Andrea said seriously. You aren't out of the woods, but you're getting closer every day.
Jane picked painfully at the cuticle.
That's just it. I don't know if I'll ever leave those woods.